Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media Webcast, Enabling Intelligent at the Edge with Low-Power FPGAs. I'm Kurt Schrader, your moderator, with today's speaker, Diane Tosetti with Microchip. Diane is a business development and channel marketing manager for the FPGA business unit at Microchip. She's responsible for training and enablement, as well as identifying and working with global partners in the development of system solutions using low-power FPGAs. Prior to Microchip, Diane held several salesman and management positions at Aero, Cypress Semiconductor, Macanica Americas, and Quantum, where she focused on regional and global technical sales of programmable devices, intellectual property, and design services. First, a little bit of housekeeping. Today's schedule consists of 50 minutes of presentation, leaving 10 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Let's run down some important features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this webcast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate today. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the presentation. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A. If you have a question pertaining to the webcast operation itself, you can submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you. This and all Open Systems Media webcasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. On with the presentation. Diane, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Kurt. Welcome, everyone. I appreciate you joining us, whether it's the morning or the afternoon or early evening. As Kurt mentioned, my name is Diane Tosetti. I am part of the Field Programmable Array business unit, which is now part of Microchip, who is a leading provider of microcontrollers, security, mixed signal, analog, and flash IP products. Today, we are here to discuss our introduction on enabling intelligence at the edge with low-power FPGAs. Of course, there is more details on our website, and we are more than happy to come to you and discuss in further detail your project requirements if the need persists. Okay, so your first question is probably, why is Microchip hosting a webinar on edge intelligence using FPGAs? Well, Microsemi is now part of Microchip, and our flash-based FPGA families, including Smart Fusion 2, Igloo 2, and our award-winning Polar Fire family of FPGAs are now part of the Microchip portfolio, which spans microcontrollers, analog, mixed signal, interface, memory, power management, switchers and controllers, high-rel discrete, enterprise storage, and of course, FPGAs. Our combined capabilities strengthens our leadership with our heritage customers, as well as expands the Microchip end markets to include industrial, automotive, and consumer, and our product solutions, making Microchip a total solutions provider. So today, for the agenda, what I'd like to start off with is talk to you about some computing trends. Then we will introduce you to smart embedded vision. I'll also discuss how FPGAs are excellent in video, imaging, and inferencing type of applications. I'll also discuss enabling intelligence at the edge using our low-power FPGAs. And finally, we'll talk about Polar Fire solutions for for smart embedded vision. Lastly, we'll wrap it up with a quick summary as well as question and answer session. So I would like to start by discussing trends in computing. Some of the trends in computing, okay. Trends in computing. This is the framework for compute today, and you can think of it as a single entity divided into three components. On the right side is the compute core with data center and cloud, and the left being devices, sensors, and actuators like an edge-based nerve endings. And in the middle is the transport gateways that connect those devices to the cloud. There is an absolute explosion of connected devices, as well as human-to-machine interaction, which is driving massive amounts of traffic through the gateways and into the cloud, where the compute processing is currently happening. This explosion of devices and traffic is creating latency. There is a need for low power that now spans from the core and the data center with their fixed power budget, which, by the way, is the main cost to a data center outside of the capital equipment cost, to supporting fanless outdoor enclosures for transport equipment, which have a need to dissipate heat in order to optimize performance, and to the edge devices, which may have a requirement for a battery. Solution trends in compute workloads are shifting from the cloud to the premise and being pushed to the edge. This paradigm shift solves two problems. Number one, latency. By making decisions outside of the data center, you've addressed latency as well as saved valuable costs in transmission fees in and out of the data center. Number two, addressing low power requirements and thermal constraints. So now that compute is shifting from the cloud to the edge, the entire structure becomes a very vulnerable surface for hackers to target, making security, both system and device level, another key concern. As with any high reliability or safety type of application, supporting continuous uptime is also very important. With edge compute paradigms and acceleration happening outside of the data center, devices need to be thermally elegant, low power, high speed, support compute workloads, and in many edge devices be available in very small form factors. Microchip is focused on the mid-range of the framework where many of these applications are becoming smarter and using visual input to make decisions. Let me introduce you to smart embedded vision. Okay, cameras are doing more than taking pictures. In fact, cameras and sensors are being broadly deployed across applications and end equipment. Drones are doing everything from delivering pizzas to providing intelligence in agriculture. A revolution in transportation is occurring from autonomous cars to traffic monitoring. Factories are becoming more efficient. They're adding machine vision and intelligence alongside of factory automation. With that breadth, design requirements for cameras vary greatly, from a thermal sensor to 720p all the way up to multiple 4K streams. Smart embedded vision is all about intelligence at the edge. To support low latency decision making, the largest potential for growth is coming from the industrial market space. On Monday, we announced Smart Embedded Vision, an initiative to develop solutions to support applications that require robust DSP and memory resources for image processing and machine learning. Machine vision, machine learning, medical imaging, and drones are just a sample set of embedded vision applications. Each of these types of applications have a unique set of requirements, but many do overlap, like the need for low power, security, flexible high-speed transport interfaces, both from the image sensor to the display, and the ability to make decisions in real time. This is where intelligence at the edge begins. It begins on making decisions based on visual data. So your second question is, why are we even talking about FPGAs in image processing? Because making those decisions based on visual data is compute intensive. It requires a high data throughput to support high resolution image sensors. It needs a significant amount of compute resources like DSP and high-speed memory in order to be efficient, and it relies on a very well-established ecosystem to be able to accelerate hardware and optimize the network infrastructure. Well, FPGAs excel at data throughput and processing. FPGAs offer parallel processing and high-speed I/O, which allows high data throughput, which is ideal for vision and imaging. In fact, FPGAs speed up image acquisition and pre-processing. They accelerate thresholding and filtering. They can execute high fidelity pattern matching and edge detection. They support the highest dynamic range cameras and the highest resolution image sensors. Image and video processing, especially at higher resolution, is compute intensive, and it demands high data throughput. FPGAs deliver. For many of the reasons that I just mentioned before, FPGAs are also excellent for inferencing and neural networking. They offer massively parallel operation capability, multiply and add functions. In fact, our DSP block is 25% more efficient as we offer a native dot product mode. FPGAs offer high-speed interconnects to memory interfaces like DDR and DDR4. They also can support high-bandwidth interfaces like 10 gigabit Ethernet, 12.7 gig, and PCI Express. All of this leads to a large DSP compute capacity delivering gigaops of performance, very low power dissipation, the ability to do field upgrades, as well as integrate additional functions like video, connectivity, and security. FPGAs deliver higher performance per watt than a CPU or GPU and offer much more flexibility than an application-specific processor or an ASIC. There are many benefits to using FPGAs in video, imaging, and inferencing. One, we offer greater power efficiencies, especially at higher resolutions and bandwidths. Two, we offer integrated and flexible hardware implementations. And three, we offer a very cost-effective support for multiple channels, all very important aspects of these types of applications. So, how do microchip low-power FPGAs enable edge intelligence? First, you need to understand the FPGA landscape. Let me explain the axis to the left, which is performance. At the right are high-density FPGAs that are targeted for data center, acceleration, wireless, and 5G types of applications. In general, this is density overkill for many smart embedded vision, as well as they are power-hungry and area inefficient. On the left side, you see ultra-low-end consumer-based FPGAs that don't offer the resources that are required for edge intelligence. In the middle, we have microchip FPGAs. The microchip low-power FPGAs offer embedded innovation by supporting high-end features in mid-range densities. The award-winning PolarFire family of FPGAs offer DDR4 support, multi-rate SerDes, from as slow as 250 megabits per second to as fast as 12.7 gigabits per second, a 25% more efficient DSP block. We offer a tenth of the static power, half of SerDes power, and the smallest package sizes available in this class of devices. This class of devices ranges from 100,000 logic elements out to 500,000, we also offer a robust RISC-V ecosystem of soft CPUs. Our Igloo 2 and Smart Fusion 2 families offer more resources in lower density devices that support lower resolution applications, as well as supporting DDR2, DDR3. We offer 5 gig SerDes. We support 30 to 50% lower total power, and we have a suite of hardened peripherals, including an ARM Cortex M3. Both families offer the lowest total power, instant-on capability, highest security, and exceptional reliability. These two product families are excellent target devices for any smart embedded vision application. So we talk about power. We highlight power. We are the lowest power offering in the FPGA market space. We performed dozens of power benchmarks using our own competitors' boards. The diagram on the right highlights only two networking examples, and there are many more available by request or on our website. Our FPGAs enable application performance at significantly lower power. On average, our benchmark showed that we are 1/10 the static power and half of the transceiver power with competing device families. Want a real example? I know it seems hard to believe, but this is an actual real-world customer example. As you can see in this design benchmark of PolarFire versus an equivalent competing device, the total power for the design using the competitor's device was just over 8 watts. When the same design inputs were benchmarked using a PolarFire FPGA, we were more than 50% lower power than their best case number. So what did that mean for this customer? They actually came up with this formula that equated $1.50 per watt in total BOM cost savings due to the reduction in total power and the improved thermals. We can do this for you in your next design. So now let's talk about PolarFire FPGA solutions in smart embedded vision type of applications. So Microchip FPGAs offer an embedded solution for resolutions up to 4K and beyond. Our high-speed LVDS I/O support multiple sensor interfaces, including fully compliant MIPI CSI-2, SLVSEC, and parallel image interfaces. We also support hardened DDR4 controllers, arbiters, line buffers. We have a suite of image processing IP. We can support stereo vision as well as advanced image signal processing. We offer deep learning solutions, including a tiny YOLO version 2 implementation, MobileNet, and ResNet. We also have companion cores that offer compression. And as far as display and interface IP out the back, we have HDMI, HDCP, DisplayPort, 10 gig CoExpress. The point here is that when you're trying to add visual intelligence at the edge, like image processing, machine learning, and compression, you need integration flexibility. This is a one-chip FPGA solution for all types of vision cameras, and it's the lowest power FPGA families, with PolarFire supporting multiple 4K streams or Smart Fusion 2 supporting HD types of implementation. Our ecosystem of both direct and companion third-party IP offer a complete end-to-end solution. So another very important aspect to a successful video and imaging application is a robust suite of imaging IP. What you're looking at on the left is a listing of the cores that we offer as part of our tools. Some of these cores are Bayer conversion, alpha blending, edge detection, display control, pattern generation. We also offer the image sensor interfaces as part of our development tools IP. So a fully compliant MIPI CSI2 receive and transmit decoders and transmitters, as well as SLVSEC. We also support multiple bit formats, all delivered in our Libero development platform. So that is what you see on the right-hand side of this slide, is an actual GUI interface of what that platform looks like. All of this IP is included with a standard license and delivered as part of our Libero development platform in our IP catalog. If you'd like to purchase the source code, we do offer this entire suite of source code for $1,500. So as you can see, we have a robust suite of IP that is included. The other important aspect in order to enable low-power, smart embedded vision development and 4K implementations is to have a hardware platform. We have a plug-and-play, out-of-the-box imaging and video hardware development platform available now. This full-featured kit offers a 300,000 logic element PolarFire FPGA. It has dual Sony 4K image sensor assemblies. It has the ability to do onboard power measurement. It supports multiple HDMI 2.0 receive and transmit, as well as an HDMI 1.4 transmit interface. We also offer a variety of other connections, including MIPI CSI2, DSI, and important to note is a high pin count FMC connector that supports additional personality cards and interfaces like CoExpress, USX GMII, and SDI. All of this is available now and includes a one-year Libero Gold software license, which has its own value of $995, for $999. Okay. In summary, I want to wrap it up with just a few salient points. Number one, we offer a highly integrated offering of imaging and signal processing. We can support deep learning inference. We have a flexible platform for development, as well as a variety of family offerings and IP that makes it easy to do a plug and play. We provide a robust end-to-end suite of IP. Our families are optimized. It's an optimized platform for video, imaging, inferencing. We offer a low-power FPGA fabric. We can deliver 2 to 4x gigaops per watt versus other FPGAs, and because of our heritage, we offer the industry's highest security and reliability with built-in tamper and clone resistance. Our fabric is SEU immune, and we do offer an extended temp range suite of devices. So as you can see, the key takeaways as to why a microchip FPGA technology matters at the edge is, number one, we are by far the lowest power FPGA, and we're happy to come and talk to you and prove that to you. Number two, we offer the smallest form factors. I didn't mention this, but we have a device as small as 11 by 11 that supports DDR4 and 12 gigabit SerDes. That's tiny, guys. We also offer a robust and efficient DSP block. So it's a multiply, accumulate, and pre-adder, multiple modes, including dot product mode. We have scalable memory resources anywhere from LPDDR3, DDR4, DDR2. All hardened controllers are available with our devices. And we have a full range ecosystem of imaging IP that we include. So I know that you'll have a lot of questions, and I greatly appreciate your time. So thank you, and I would like to pass it back to Kurt to open it up for question and answers.
Great. Thanks, Diane. There's a lot of really good information there. Want to remind the audience, we've got plenty of time, so let's make sure we take advantage of the expertise and feel free to continue to ask your questions now and throughout the end of the Q&A here. Let's start with this one. Here's a really good one. Microchip has a lot of different kinds of chips. One that's mentioned here is long-range or low-rod chips for Wi-Fi and what have you. Are there any thoughts about integrating the FPGAs with low-rod chips or GPS or magnetometers? Just to kind of support a multifunction IoT device or edge intelligence device. Any plans around that?
That's a great question. And, you know, since we are a new business unit for Microchip, we are starting to initiate these discussions as far as integrating other Microchip solutions into our IP and into our FPGAs. Those specifically, I don't have an answer on as far as LoRa and GPS, but it's definitely something, Carlos, we can get back to you.
Right. Cool. So let's see here. Development tools. What kind of development tools are available for the FPGA? What languages am I going to be writing in? Verilog or higher level?
Okay. So the name of our development tool is called Libro. We are on version 12.1. We are shortly going to be releasing Libro version 12.2. We support mixed language, so both Verilog and VHDL are supported.
Okay.
We offer a variety of different licenses. Our tool is license-based. You receive a gold license, which does include a suite of IP, like the imaging IP, as well as additional IP. Think of JESD 204B interface. That comes included with our tool. I have a 60-day full-up evaluation license available for download from the website. I also have a free version of our tool. It's a silver license. The simple difference between the silver license and the gold license is that the silver license supports only the smallest PolarFire FPGA, and you have to choose a single language. Do you want to speak only in Verilog? Do you want to speak only in VHDL? But other than that, the silver license, which is free, is available on the website. For the larger PolarFire devices, I do offer a platinum-based license. That platinum license offers mixed language, it offers all of the IP, and it supports every device within the Microchip FPGA family. We also have a development tool called Soft Console. So if you are looking to develop your own soft CPU implementation and deploy that within an FPGA, we are promoting RISC-V very heavily. We've made a recent announcement around RISC-V and the next architecture announcement, which includes the PolarFire FPGA as a baseline and hardens out a RISC-V CPU subsystem. So a little bit more than what you asked for, but hopefully that covered the tools question. Lots of information on the website, and again, you know, happy to come and speak to anybody directly about
tools. Great. Yeah, no, I think that's an important point. The tools are always something that a lot of the audience is going to ask questions about. What about debuggers, debugging tools and debugging interfaces?
Well, great question on debugging. We actually have a tool within our Libro tool called Smart Debug. It is completely unique to any other logic analyzer that's available from the competition. In fact, it's more than just a logic analyzer. It's actually like an oscilloscope on chip. And what is different about our debugger is you're actually able to dynamically interact with the design without having to leave room within utilization of the device. You could have a fully utilized device. You could also don't need to have any memory resources. You are changing values on the fly without recompiling, and you're then forcing values through the device at multiple different hardware and fabric breakpoints, which allows you to identify and fix problems without having to recompile. You then, of course, have to go back, make the changes to your code, and recompile to make them stick, but the suite of smart debug tools is amazing. With regards to CERTES, we also have as part of that smart debug suite a tool called Smart BERT, where sometimes getting a really clean eye signal is a challenge. So imagine if you could have that same dynamic interaction with your CERTES lanes and adjust amplitude on the fly to make sure you're having the cleanest signal possible for your design. So these are two things completely unique to Microchip.
Okay, yeah, that's a really powerful set. It's approaching, you know, regular MCU or CPU debugging with single stepping through it and being able to change registers and fields, et cetera. So pretty impressive. Here's another really good question. What do you recommend for entry level with low cost chip for beginners? So maybe somebody has an application that they think could be good for an FPGA to do. How do you recommend them kind of getting started and doing their prototyping?
Well, we have several low-cost entry-level boards. If you have heard of Microchip Masters, it's held globally. The first version of Microchip Masters is the first week of August, and at Microchip Masters, we will be featuring classes based on the DigiKey Maker Kit. The DigiKey Maker Kit is $30. It has a Smart Fusion 2 10,000 logic element device on board. We have labs and example projects already up and available on the DigiKey website. We also have our own partner boards from Future. Future has another low-cost board. They have the RISC-V Creative Board. That board is $99. And it comes with a default bitstream that includes a RISC-V soft CPU. We also, from Future, have a very low-cost PolarFire kit called the Avalanche Kit. That kit is $179. It's got some pretty basic interfaces like PMOD and Microbus, but it's a powerful board overall for the cost. It also comes with a gold license. Now, on the mid-range, we have the Aero Everest board, which gets into the higher price point. It's $599. And then the boards from Microchip directly are the Splash Kit, which is $799, the full-up PolarFire Eval Kit, which is just under $1,500. But if you're targeting a really tiny device or a really kind of maker-based development, I would say target the DigiKey Maker board to start. And the license is free as well.
Okay, great. Yeah,
great
it sounds
question.
Like you've got boards from maker boards on up to more, you know, serious application-oriented devices. And it sounds also, you mentioned DigiKey in Future, so you've got an ecosystem of distribution and to be able to, you know, provide these boards in pretty timely manners then?
Yes, absolutely. We have a full distribution network as well as Microchip Direct.
Okay. You mentioned field upgradability, so maybe you can explain to people how field upgrade of an FPGA works. People are, you know, typically understand how operating systems or application software gets downloaded, but can you do the same things with an FPGA? Do you do it over a network connection? Do you need a special interface?
We do support in-application programming of the FPGA, so that would say yes, you can do it over a network connection. So having that field upgradability of an FPGA is one of the key values of an FPGA, the ability to do that. So absolutely.
All right. And I guess the boards, you mentioned the ARM Cortex, so are those things that you – macro cells that you can put in the FPGA to give you compute then? Is that how that works?
So the ARM Cortex is part of our Smart Fusion 2 suite of families. It's an ARM Cortex M3. It's actually a hardened microcontroller subsystem that's separate from the fabric. So that hardened microcontroller subsystem that is ARM-based in that family offers, you know, a lot of interfaces like SPI, a watchdog timer, CAN interface, USB, you name it. There's a lot of peripherals that are included with that. We also offer a soft ARM in PolarFire for an M1 type of implementation.
Okay, great. Some additional really good questions coming in on the debugging. Is there a limitation on the number of nodes that can be probed in the hardware debugging when you're doing it dynamically?
So you can set 2 hardware fabric breakpoints at any one time, but you can manipulate those 2 to anywhere within the device itself. Think of it like a mesh has been laid over the die, and you can choose any 2 points, any 2 pins of that die, and start your debug from those 2 points. Those are the hardware breakpoints.
Okay. Okay, great. Some questions about the packaging and environmentals. What is the temperature range and the life cycle of the chip?
So great questions. You know, Microchip is known for not EOLing any product. And, you know, Microsemi brought that same heritage into that type of EOL, the assurance of supply. So we do offer a longevity letter. Now, if you're talking about reliability and programming cycles, that's an algorithmic formula that depends on the number of programming cycles and thermals over time. So we guarantee retention to 20 years of the device and the design. So hopefully that addressed kind of both of those questions.
Sure. And I guess, you know, a lot of these edge intelligence devices, if you're looking at, you know, IoT and 5G, they're not just in data centers or temperature controlled places. They might be on phone poles or out on an antenna somewhere. Do you have extended temperature range and military grade kind of chips, or what kind of packaging do you have for environmentals like that?
Great question. In fact, with PolarFire, what we've done for the commercial temp is extended commercial temp offering from 0 to 100 degrees C at the junction. So everyone else in the market space is standard commercial is 0 to 85, and if you want to get to 100, you have to go to an industrial temp.
Okay.
So we do offer industrial temp. We offer a military-grade device that will, the only caveat with the military spec is that it will be leaded balls versus Rohs. We also have AECQ temp grade for automotive. So you'll be able to target those types of devices for PolarFire starting in the next version of our tool being released in August and the follow-on tool in November. These are just service pack revisions. We also offer AECQ grade T2, so under the hood, in our Igloo 2 and Smart Fusion 2 families. We also have, I didn't mention them today, some smaller device families called ProASIC that do offer extended temperature ranges as well in automotive.
Okay. Your ecosystem. So maybe we can cover a little bit of the ecosystem. What does your ecosystem for artificial intelligence look like?
You know, that's a great question. And artificial intelligence, this is the hot topic of du jour, of the day. And we have a partner that we've developed a core and a compiler implementation called ASIC Design Services. And so their compiler on our FPGA is a tiny YOLO V2 implementation, which is you only look once. We also have additional partnerships depending on the type of application. You know, so if you want to have custom visual object detection, that's going to be the ASIC Design Services. If you want to do face detection, we're working with NALBI. If you want to have GDPR-ready object and people detection, we have a relationship with GRASPR. If you're looking for an MPU plus an FPGA type of implementation, we're working with MDALO. We've got a highly compressed convolutional neural network MPU and FPGA implementation with a company called Exnor. If you're looking for gesture-based control and response, we are working with Motion Gestures. Also, if your application requires depth detection or stereo vision, we're working with Nerion. We also have an audio event detection partnership with InSpirit. And lastly, I don't think I mentioned VectorBlox. We have a soft vector processor and software toolkit with VectorBlox. So great questions. You know, machine learning and artificial intelligence, very important to us, and we're making additional significant investments internally. So we're also building out our own deep neural network based on MobileNet.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you've got a lot of companies doing a lot of different unique things. Did you, you know, seek them out? Did they come to you? Maybe you put together the best of breed for this kind, these kinds of applications?
You know what? I'm proud of my product family, so I'm going to say yes, we're absolutely best of breed.
Okay.
Now, you have to look at that, joking, all jokes aside, that, you know, what we offer as far as value to a customer when it comes to artificial intelligence is flexibility, low power, and the thermal elegance.
Right.
We're also tiny, tiny, tiny. So in order to get into these very small machine vision camera types of applications, you need to have a small device that can perform a lot of functions, including compression,
mm-hmm.
in a tiny footprint and form factor. So, you know, the reasons for using one of our FPGAs in those types of applications are many. That's just a few.
Okay. The latest PolarFire FPGA is anti-fuse based? And maybe
you can explain
what anti-fuse is.
So anti-fuse is an OTP, or one-time programmable type of technology. We still absolutely offer and support our anti-fuse product. In fact, I mentioned the assurance of supply, keeping products around for a long time. We're still selling anti-fuse AX, MX, SX, and AX type of devices. From, you know, the late 90s. But the differentiator with PolarFire and what makes PolarFire non-volatile is the fact that we used a 28-nanometer CMOS process that is highly cost-effective. Now, to bring the non-volatility to bear, we license a technology called Sonos from Cyprus, which is silicon oxide, nitrous oxide, which makes the entire device non-volatile. And the benefit of it's a mature process node, so we've really area optimized it, and we've made it low power. So that's the difference between anti-fuse and PolarFire.
Okay. Maybe you can talk a little bit about the kinds of applications the FPGA is being used for. You mentioned a lot having to do with motion and vision. I suppose robotics would probably be one thing. Maybe a driver assist in automotive might be another. Industrial control, you mentioned, like, you know, assembly line vision kinds of things.
Absolutely. So we've seen very early design ins and wins in distributed ADAS types of systems, mm-hmm. in smart grid, also in smart medical. Think of the democratization of healthcare and driving the cost of patient monitoring and home patient monitoring, as well as in-hospital patient monitoring, down. So lots of medical types of applications, we've seen early success because of the security features of PolarFire as well.
Right.
Within motor control and motion control, we can support multi-axis, high RPM, and multiple motors. So we have like a 3D laser wire cutter solution is another one. Anything portable is also a great target application. So as I mentioned, some of those medical devices are becoming handheld, being able to be brought by the nurse from room to room, or even a home application. So, smart glasses are also another early win that we've won across multiple different types of customers, from, a consumer-based gaming glasses application all the way out to, like, night vision, smart munition targeting. So AR and VR is another early win for PolarFire.
Okay. And you mentioned smart grid. Now, that was a little surprising to me. What are they using motion and vision in the smart grid applications for?
So, well, the smart grid is all about security and SDU immunity. So, with the smart grid, the nodes are out, and they're out in the environment, in harsh environments, obviously being smart grid type of applications, whether it's reporting energy usage, or being part of the microinverter, they need that flash based type of design, so they're live at power up and instant on, and they have to be completely immune to soft errors. So the robustness of our product family is where that we would apply there in smart grid.
Okay, so the vision isn't really the primary thing. It's all the other reliability, temperature, response kinds of features. How are the low power or the power numbers calculated? And I guess you showed some benchmarks. They were asking if you had any benchmarks.
So I have tons of benchmarks, and I can rattle off a couple of data sheet specs if it makes the audience feel better. but we do have a very detailed power estimator that's available on the web. But let me give you an example. Typical standby current for a PolarFire device is 34 milliwatts. Okay? A typical standby current in a Smart Fusion 2 device is 7 milliwatts. Now, when you're talking about, you know, high-speed communication, you look at the SerDes channels. So each SerDes lane at 10 gigabit Ethernet speed is 90 milliwatts. So if that gives you a sense, I can tell you our competitor's data sheet in a like-sized device for a 10 gig SerDes lane, this is all public domain knowledge, is 148 milliwatts per 10 gig SerDes lane. So, you know, happy to, you know, to jump on a call, WebEx, and work through a power estimation custom to anyone's design.
Okay. Here's a question about the FPGA development tools again. So, like, now they don't currently pay for FPGA development tools, so I think you covered this a little bit, but maybe you can elaborate on how much the tools cost. And from what I gathered before, it sounds like it depends. You can get started for nothing, I guess, is what I was hearing.
Yes, we have, you know, so if somebody's out there and they just want to kick the tires, and, you know, they want to kick the tires on any of our devices, including, you know, one of the larger PolarFire type of devices, you can easily download a 60 days full-up license that will be time-bombed after 60 days. The only caveat with that 60-day license is you can't do any programming.
Yeah.
You know, it's important to note that we also have that silver license, which is free. And that silver license does support the smallest PolarFire device, which is 100,000 logic elements. Now, beyond that, we have the gold license, which is $9.95, and the platinum license, which is $29.95, and then the renewal fees are half of that in each case. The only difference between the gold and the platinum license are the devices they support.
Okay.
So the very largest PolarFire devices, there is a lot going on in them. Those are, that's the 500 and several, most of the versions of the 300 KLE device are in the platinum. However, I want to point out that if you buy one of our development kits, the imaging kit, any of our partner board kits, you get a gold license as part of that kit purchase.
Oh.
And those devices that are featured on those kits are included in the gold license. So think of it this way. You're kind of cheating a little bit. If you have a 300 KLE design and you want to target one of those devices that's on the kit, you don't need a platinum license. However, if you want to target a device that's outside of one of those that's featured on one of our kits, you'd need a platinum license in order to do that. So not to confuse, but, you know, to let people know that if you're interested in buying a development kit, you know, the devices that are listed on those development kits are supported in gold licenses as well.
Okay. And you mentioned an event in August that sounded like it was kind of a combination of training and hands-on application things. Can anyone go to that? Or
so Microchip Masters is an amazing function that is put on by Microchip on an annual basis. There's a 5-day or 3-day program. There is a cost associated with it. We do have some sponsorship opportunities that are available, you know, but somebody that would come, they would pay for this event in its entirety, which includes, you know, the food, the classes, everything that you would need in order to learn about all of the different products from Microchip, you can do in a very short amount of time. So that's what Microchip Masters is about. We also have, you know, we have three classes this year at Microchip Masters that are more of your entry-level introduction to FPGAs, how do you program and configure the microcontroller subsystem. And then next year, for 2020, we'll have some additional classes that include smart embedded vision and polar fire type of classes.
Okay. Great.
I forgot to mention one thing. There is, I apologize,
sure,
there
no.
is a lecture class in this year's Masters that is on polar fire. It's just not hands-on. That's the only differentiator.
I see. Okay, so, and it sounds like you can get some hands-on. Do you have, and you can get more information on the website about that, I assume, if people are interested in going to that would be on the Microchip website.
Absolutely. You know what? If you just Google Microchip Masters, it comes up immediately on any search engine.
Okay. I guess maybe you can you talk a little bit about the roadmap for FPGAs? Where do you see the technology going and scaling? Are you going to just end up with more compute, lower power? What's the roadmap look like?
You know, so that's an exciting question for me to answer, and it's an exciting place for us to be. If you go to our website and you look at the PolarFire SoC family architecture announcement that we've made, we've announced a 5-core hardened RISC-V based SoC FPGA. This is going to be super disruptive. It's market leading. We've announced the architecture. We've announced the fact that there will be 5 cores in total, 4 of which can be configured into a coherent Linux cluster. But think about this. We've also identified a way to have a configurable 2-meg L2 cache. So what does that mean? That means in a safety critical type of application or even in a smart embedded vision application, you could have a redundant implementation of Linux running, so there's your safety critical, on 2 of the cores. You could have the other two cores doing image processing or some type of detection or, you know, control plane algorithm, anything else. So what that is that's asymmetric multiprocessing. Nobody else in the market space offers that. And we're able to do that from the RISC-V architecture and our L2 cache and the configurability of that. Please, I urge everybody on the call to look into RISC-V. The summit is in San Jose. It's held the first week of December at the San Jose Convention Center. We will be doing a full-blown announcement of PolarFire SoC, including the family plan. We will be launching the data sheet, tools. Lots of information is coming in the December timeframe. But for now, there is ways to get started. They're up and on our website. We have a hardware platform that is for ecosystem types of engagements, but we also have an instruction set simulation platform that's available on the website. That's called Renode. So anyone who's a firmware designer and they want to start implementing or emulating, you know, the cores and looking at that asymmetric multiprocessing capability, you can do so on the website with Renode. We're also hosting the first Thursday at 8 a.m. of every month a Renode webinar. So anyone who's interested in understanding what is Renode, I want to know more about it, what can I do with it, please sign up on our website and jump into those Renode webinars online on the website.
Okay, and for the RISC-V SoC, are you keeping your own distribution of Linux, or how does that work?
Actually, we're going to support multiple operating systems. Linux is just the most widely adopted.
Right.
So
right.
Linux is 70% of the market, so of course we're going to support Linux. We also support FreeRTOS, Yocto Build Root, Bare Metal, you name it. There's a bunch of other OSs out there that we will support and we plan to support. Just we talk about Linux because guess what? It's the most popular.
Sure. And I guess there's a distribution that you're supporting, or is it how do they get the Linux build?
Oh, you're referring to the Linux kernel?
Yeah, just lots of times you have to keep your own distribution for the system on chip that might incorporate drivers for your macro cells or whatever you're integrating in the
SoC. Oh, we have a full ecosystem called MI5 that will be in support of our SoC and our soft CPUs. So that ecosystem will include those drivers and kernels and boards and everything else. You know, right now, the soft RTOSs that are available today, so open source-wise, FreeRTOS, LightOS, Minute, Zephyr. Outside of, you know, Linux, the commercial ones are Express Logic, Micrium, and Sager as well for embedded OS. All these RTOSs already run on, I mentioned, the MI5 soft RISC-V CPU ecosystem. So available today on the website.
Okay. And I guess in terms of finding out more information about the IP cores that you showed and how to evaluate them, any information there? Do they just go to the website or?
So all of the imaging cores that I mentioned are available as part of a Libero tool license. So even if you were going to go and download the 60-day eval or the silver license, those will be part of the Libero IP catalog. All of those cores are going to be in there. And as, if you remember, there was a little green key next to them. You can just grab the key and drag and drop into the design space.
Okay. And application notes, do you have anything people can kind of read about or see a generalized design of, you know, any of the applications you talked about in, you know, smart grid or robotics or other kinds of things?
You know, we've got a lot of documentation on smart embedded vision available on the website. In fact, over the weekend, not only did we announce the press release on Monday, but over the weekend we put up the smart embedded vision webpage that has a ton of documentation. You can also contact local sales. There's a lead request form and an email alias if you want to learn more. So expect more and more communication from us on that topic.
Okay, and I guess you did mention a couple of times if somebody had specific applications and really wanted to drill down on, you know, what the memory footprint, what the power consumption might be, those kinds of things, you're able to kind of have kind of a focus sessions with people about their specific applications?
Absolutely. So not only do we have the ability to contact local sales and to grab one of our experts and talk to you directly, we have a robust user guide and tutorials available as part of the documentation. We also publish handbooks on each one of our demo guides. So all of those are available on the website. Now, as far as resource utilization, you know, you're definitely going to want to have a specialized application engineer come and talk to you about, you know, conversion of design from, you know, one vendor to another, or even just to, you know, to dive deeper into any of the topics that I've mentioned today. And, you know, great questions, everybody. I really appreciate, you know, all of the time. If you have any additional questions, please reach out to me. You could also go to the website, fill out a contact request form to reach local sales. You know, we're very excited about this. You know, PolarFire for us is a winner, and we want it to be a winner for you too. So appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and that does bring us to the end of today's webcast. I want to thank Diane for sharing her insights on enabling intelligence at the edge with low-power FPGAs. We at Open Systems Media and Microchip want to thank you, the audience, for attending and contributing excellent questions today. This webcast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media webcasts available for download there as MP3s. Open Systems Media webcasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. Thanks for attending, and have a great day.